By the time that Roger dies in 1094, most of the island is more or less under the authority of the Norman, the Normans. His son, Roger II, who would go on to unite both Sicily and Italy together, would create what would become one of the most effective kingdoms in Western Europe. And again, that's something difficult for us to imagine, especially in light of the earlier lecture I gave about the three great monarchies of Western Europe, England, France, the Holy Roman Empire. Sicily, and it was called the Kingdom of Sicily, or sometimes the Regno, the Kingdom, later known as the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, was in some ways turned out to be a rather ideal medieval kingdom. In 1130, Sicily and southern Italy were united under Roger II as a single kingdom, and Sicily and southern Italy presented a model of efficiency for any medieval kingdom. Roger II, for instance, could take the Byzantine and Muslim administration and apply it to his domains in southern Italy. Furthermore, he had access to all sorts of fleets and money that were important for waging wars in the east. And the Norman kingdom, to give you some sense of the size of its power, Roger II could probably call upon as many as 30,000 vassals who owed him knight service in, say, the year 1130. His contemporary in England, Henry I, could call upon only 10,000. So that gives you some idea of the power that was created in southern Italy and Sicily by the Normans in their wars against the Muslims and the Byzantines. One other point about these wars. In fighting against the Muslims and in fighting in southern Italy, the Normans turned out to be some of the finest and most indomitable warriors in Western Europe. And to give you some sort of sense of how they were viewed by the Muslims and Byzantines, and you'll get this later in the course when I deal with descriptions of Anna Komnena, it's important to stress that Normans went into these wars with a real sense that they were favored by St. George and St. Leonard. St. Leonard was important because if you got captured, he was the patron saint of captives and made sure you got ransom. And these battles just confirm that notion. And the best that comes to mind to me is an anecdote that was recorded by Galfredus Malaterra, who was the chronicler in southern Italy who talked a great deal about these Norman operations in southern Italy and Sicily. And he records an incident that really captures a sense of how the Normans cultivated this notion of violence and ferocity and how they used it as a means of terrorizing Muslims and Byzantines. And apparently it's in one of the early wars of, it's not in Sicily, it's actually set in Italy, but applies just as well with what Roger I did in Sicily. There's an envoy sent from Constantinople to that notorious figure, Robert Guiscard, the Duke of Apulia, who created the Norman state in southern Italy. And Guiscard meets the representative. They go into his tent. And in the meantime, the horse, the stallion of this envoy is put in the charge of one of Guiscard's high vassals, a knight. And the knight is holding the horse and stroking it, and the negotiations go on, and finally they're resolved, and undoubtedly not to the satisfaction of the Byzantine envoy. And he comes out of the tent, and the Norman knight sees this, that the negotiations are over, and he is stroking the horse and then clenches his fist, and with one blow, wham, hits that horse at its vulnerable point, knocks it out, and according to the chronicler, the horse died. And the envoy is shocked, beautiful stallion destroyed. And Guiscard says, no problem, take whatever one else you want. But the audacity, the unexpectedness of this violent act just drives home the point. You do not mess with the Normans. And this is typical of the type of image cultivated by the Normans, and it will be repeated time and time again over the course of the First Crusade, and especially by the most brilliant of the Norman princes I've mentioned earlier, the son of Robert Guiscard, who will take up the cross on the First Crusade, that is Bohemond, the Count of Toronto, who will use these methods of terror to demoralize his enemies and to inspire the Crusaders at critical points throughout the First Crusade. And so, by 1095, the Normans in Sicily, the Italian merchant republics, the Christians living on the shores of Spain and France are more than ready to hear the appeals of Urban II that it is time to go on holy war and recover Jerusalem.